Okay, hopefully we won't have too long of a meeting. Just to start off the meeting, my brother lives in Northern California and has had his power turned on and off, and he thought he'd be smart and go down and buy a generator, and went to Home Depot, and there were no generators and no extension cords and no gas cans, and anything you needed for basic survival had been already sold out. So that's something to always be prepared. I think most people in this room will be, but you know, for your friends and colleagues, remind them to keep their car full of gas because the gas stations run on electricity to pump the gasoline, so on and so forth. So,
and so,
right. First, for announcements, we have a new member, Timothy Munsing. I don't know if he's here yet.
He's not here.
Not here yet. Well, we'll introduce him if he shows up. Next, we have the meeting minutes from the July 12th meeting. I've already read these, and they seem to be in order. And I would propose that if there's no opposition, that we approve the minutes. Great. Next is the OCEMS report and correspondence. We'll start with the medical director's report with Dr. Schultz.
So there's a few things that I would have presented, but one of my colleagues is here today and will present the disaster-related subjects. There's several of them that he will address. So I will actually defer my initial comments on our disaster preparedness to my colleague.
All right. Good morning, committee members. So I just want to give a little overview of the Orange County, the Healthcare Coalition of Orange County, just to put it in front of this group and kind of, I think we've talked about it before, but it doesn't hurt to revisit it given everything that's going on. So we have a Healthcare Coalition of Orange County, which is stakeholders in the med health arena that come together to help, that we help coordinate and so that they can prepare and plan for emergencies within the medical health system. This group plugs into larger groups such as countywide emergency management, but the group's initiatives really are focused on medical health. And we break them out into five advisory committee groups that consist of all types of healthcare providers, from ambulance providers to hospice home health, long-term care SNF, clinics, urgent cares, outpatient, and hospitals. So the goal and objectives of these groups are to work on initiatives that are specific to their genre of healthcare and help them build their readiness and their preparedness so that they can handle emergencies and so that we don't have instances like long-term cares and skilled nursing facilities that don't have plans, and their plan is during an emergency to transfer patients to hospitals because hospitals may not have that capacity. Same with all the other groups. They have different things that challenge them during emergencies that they need to work on and prepare and plan for. So that's a very broad overview of the coalition group. We meet quarterly as an entire group, all those different stakeholders. Our next meeting is October 24th. We meet quarterly to bring the group together, and so all of the different providers can see what the smaller advisory, we have five advisory groups that we can, they can all see what they're working on. For example, dialysis will report out on what they're working on. Hospice home health will report out on what they're working on. So the entire system can kind of see how it's coming together. The advisory groups also meet quarterly. So these subgroups that are working on specific initiatives that are addressing their own unique challenges meet quarterly and work on activities to help advance their preparedness and readiness for disasters and emergencies. So Healthcare Coalition of Orange County, next meeting's October 24th. And through this, we also coordinate other activities like the statewide medical health exercise, which this year is a earthquake flood scenario. All of those different stakeholders are planning participants in that exercise, and they create activities through the exercise that challenge their system so that they can test the plans and the things that they're working on to make sure that they're effective. And if they're not effective, they can work on initiatives to correct it and make it effective. So that is statewide medical health exercises, the next big exercise that we're putting together to with that group coordinating this event, and that's November 20th.
Just to interrupt for 1 second, I thought you were going to introduce yourself. This is Mr. Michael Blobby.
Completely
He's the assistant administrator for the EMS agency. So I wanted to make sure that they knew you were.
I apologize for that. I made the assumption that everyone knew me because I'm famous or something.
And the other thing is the Healthcare Coalition meeting will be at Orange County Global Medical Center on the 24th.
Correct. And then we work as a platform for communication of essential things that are happening, such as another thing that's coming up is the Great Shakeout on October 17th, so we communicate that out. And then things that go on in the system, like everyone, I think everyone knows what PSPS is, right, the power safety. So things like that are happening in the system, we communicate that out and make sure our providers are aware and know what's going on and potentially understand, or hopefully they understand the impacts, but we help coordinate that type of activity as well. So that's the Healthcare Coalition of Orange County and the Health Emergency Management Section under EMS that works to plan these medical health planning type things for emergencies.
Did you get a sense when you discussed the power shutoffs of how they're prepared? Will their operations just shut down, or do they have any contingency plans?
I think just like you have in any type of system, everybody's at a different level of their ability to handle events and emergencies. I think for the most part, there are many people are prepared. They have generators. They have fuel plans. That's stuff that they already have to have because it's required by licensing. So many of them are already prepared. There are some maybe specific gaps here and there, such as hospice home health may not be as aware of these events, and that's what the Healthcare Coalition does, is it will bring awareness and then also help them put into plans when they go out and do their initial home eval. Then include in that home eval, one of the initiatives we're working on is getting them to include in that home eval to have that resident sign up for the alerts from the electrical company so that they get the alert, because the hospice home health may have such a dispersed group throughout the county that they may not get the alert on all the residents. So put that in, work with them to get in their home eval, things like that, and work with them in their home eval to have residents be prepared because they're a little bit different population with medical health needs.
Great, thank you.
Before I give the rest of my report, I'd invite Dr. Gibbs to please come up and join us.
Just like that, it could happen to any one of you.
So I have just two. So, Mr. Dlabi, thank you very much. That's very effective presentation. I just have two other issues to discuss. First of all, the last time we met, we talked about West Anaheim Medical Center temporarily having their cardiovascular receiving center designation suspended. We have met with them subsequently. They have rectified a lot of the issues that were initially causing some issues, some problems with the designation, and so they have been given a six-month designation to continue as a cardiovascular receiving center, and we'll probably do a site survey in about 2 to 3 months to see if they've been able to address the rest of the issues. But at least they were very responsive and have been subsequently given a six-month redesignation. The other issue is the sort of the housekeeping that we do twice a year, once in April and once in October, where we review existing policies, procedures, standing orders, all the kinds of regulatory stuff that goes into the EMS agency, and any of those that need some updating, we update, and then we post to the web. And in the correspondence section is a letter that I wrote that identifies all the policies. There's 22 of them, so it's a lot. But there's little one-liners by each one that says what it is that I did, so that you don't have to review the entire policy to figure out what got changed. It's identified there for you. And sometimes it's relatively small stuff. Sometimes it can be a little bit bigger, but it's all there for anyone that wanted to read it. And that's it for me.
Great. Next is the hospital diversion report.
Normally, Mr. David Johnson would give reports on hospital diversion and ambulance offload times, but he couldn't make it today. So they are both in your packets. The diversion time, there was a significant bump in July and August, and we were a little bit concerned about that, but when we examined September's, it went back to normal. So I don't have a clear explanation for what happened. One of the issues is of course, for the for UC Irvine, July and August is that terrible time when all of the interns move on and the new medical students have just become interns, move in, and it slows things down considerably. And so that can have some impact on the diversion. But there are other hospitals that had increase in their diversion times, and I don't really have a ready explanation for that. But it did resolve, and September's was back to baseline. The same with the ambulance offload times. There are there was a bump a little bit in July and August, but those have largely returned to normal. And the hospitals that have substantial deviations from those times typically have substantial deviations. So in summary, there really isn't a whole lot new on either of those two reports. So things are...
Do you know any information about hospital census during those months?
The hospital census, in the summertime, the census does go up some. I don't have ready access to those numbers, so I can't give you the exact information, but that certainly does play a role.
Next, are you going to do the next one, Adrian, the 9/11 emergency ambulance transport contract performance?
Yes, I am. Thank you. So you can find the annual report. It's attachment 4 in your packet here, and you'll find that the contractors have maintained a 90%, above 90% compliance rate. But the annual report has everything listed in it as far as performance for the whole year, and it can also be found on healthdisasteroc.org/EMS. And that's it.
The time, when I went through it, at times actually, like, they, it looks like they're continuing to get better and better. So that's great work. Mm-hmm. Next is the EMS annual report for 2018-19.
Usually Ms. Tammy McConnell would deliver that, but she also has not been able, she's been out for a while on some medical issues. So I'm going to go ahead and field this one as well. Essentially, this is also a document in your packet. What it is it's a summary of what this committee has done over the last fiscal year. So it's a little confusing because some of the things are on calendar years, some of them are on fiscal years. This particular report is on a fiscal year, so it goes essentially July to June. And so it's a little bit off from how we typically look at things, but it's a pretty effective summary of the issues that came before the EMCC and some of the votes we took and the outcomes, and it's just there sort of as a summary of our activity over the last year. That's not really an actionable item. It's just more so that we can sort of track items. There are things that we may have felt fell off the radar screen. It's a chance to review that and go, well, I'd like to either bring this up or I'm pretty satisfied with this. I think we did a reasonable job and we can move on. So that's there for basically your own reading pleasure.
Next is attachment number 6, EMS correspondence.
And that is the sort of the catch-all for all the things that I haven't talked about. There's some documentation from me on several issues within EMS dealing with some of the topics that are about to come up. The 50-day comment periods for the stroke neuro receiving centers, the cardiovascular receiving centers, and the comprehensive children's emergency receiving centers. And there's all the documentation related to those.
I have a question on the I went and put some comments on the various policies for those, which you can do for cardiovascular stroke and CCERC. Cardiovascular and stroke has state guidelines that we have to adhere to as well. Is it the same with the children's, or is that an individual Orange County policy?
The CCERC policy is an Orange County specific policy. The impact of the state coming out with formal regulations on emergency medical services for children program, which we do not have, but we sort of look at that program because we'd like to emulate it. We want to make sure that we're not falling behind because we don't have a formal EMSC policy. And so we did review the EMSC policy that came out, and we looked at our designation for what we call Comprehensive Children Emergency Receiving Centers, or CCERCs, and we wanted to make sure that what we had was in line with what the state had added. So we made some changes to the CCRC policy to make it consistent with what the state was saying, even though, in fact, we don't have a formal EMSC policy. We wanted to be able to say that we have the same effective quality, the same kinds of programs that are reflected in the state program. It's just not exactly what the state has prescribed.
Great, thank you. Next, Section 5, which is the EMCC Advisory Subcommittee and Advisory Group reports versus facilities.
So the Facilities Committee met on September 10th, and the major issue that came out of that meeting was the discussion about the merging of what was the CCRC pilot program, which looked at specifically making CHOC, Children's Hospital of Orange County, a base station and taking their status as a CCRC and sort of rolling it into the current policy on designation of patients and where they go, so that the pilot sort of stopped and all of the, because it was successful, all of the components of that were then rolled into a more universal policy, which you have on sending patients to various centers and designation of how the medics make decisions about who goes where and whether it's BLS or ALS and the rules that govern how patients are moved throughout the county. That's our 310 policy. So we took the fact that we're now going to be more heavily relying on CCRCs to provide guidance on where medics should go and how they should manage their patients into that policy, and that was done successfully. And so that is now completed. And that was really the major issue. The rest of it was just mostly housekeeping.
Next is Education and Training Advisory Subcommittee.
That committee met on October 2nd, and there were two issues that were discussed there. The first one was Pit Crew CPR. This was, again, originally a pilot project that ended in June, and the findings from this pilot, which were successful, again, were then rolled into our standing orders on how to resuscitate adults. So adolescents and adults in cardiac arrest, there's a standing order for that, and we took the new knowledge that we gained from the pilot project and rolled it into our standing orders. So now our standing orders have changed to reflect the new knowledge that we gained from the Pit Crew CPR project. So that was presented. The other thing was that Fountain Valley Regional Medical Center is going to hold what they call a 15 to 50 exercise on November 13th, and that means basically they're trying to emulate what happened in Las Vegas, so they give themselves 15 minutes to prepare to receive 50 casualties, hence the name 15 to 50. And that will be going on in the morning at Fountain Valley on the 13th of November.
Thank you. Next is the County Paramedic Advisory Committee.
And for that, which met on September 11th, the issues that came up at the County Paramedic Advisory Committee are the issues that are going to come up in the rest of the agenda here today. So rather than just go over it twice, I'll just defer to when we do the next items on the agenda.
So next would be unfinished business, which is the three policies, the stroke neurology receiving center policy, public comment period, cardiovascular receiving, and then comprehensive children's receiving center policy.
So the first one is a policy that basically lays out how we designate and the requirements to be a stroke neurology receiving center. In Orange County, we really don't have multiple levels. We just have one. And they do it all, and we have a fair number of them. There's nine, and that pretty well covers the county, so the need for additional centers doesn't really exist. These centers are always able to provide the service we need. Excuse me. But the state issued guidance July 1st that provided formal regulation to how counties that have these programs run them. And there were a lot of things that they required we already did, but there were some things that they required that we didn't specifically address or that we didn't do. And so we revised our 650 policy to make it in line with what the state said, and then we put it out for 50-day public comment. And that public comment period closed yesterday. But we did receive quite a few comments on that, and we will be changing the policy a little bit because of some of those public comments. They were right on point, and I think they helped us, and we'll be adjusting the policy some to reflect that. I haven't had a chance to review them all in detail yet, so I can't give you a timeline when we'll be finished with the process, but I definitely can say that we will be making additional adjustments to that policy based on the public comments we received.
And then cardiovascular receiving center?
This is sort of the same kind of issue. We had this program in place in our county for many years, and then the state issued regulations that sort of codified a lot of the things that we did, but also reflected a couple of things we didn't do. So we had to revise the policy to meet the state requirements, and then we put that out for public comment, and that will close October 24th. And I don't think we've received any comments on the cardiovascular policy yet, but there's still time left. And usually they don't show up till the last minute, and then everybody writes them. So it's I'm expecting we will still receive something on the cardiovascular receiving center policy. And then the last one is one that just got put out. This is the Comprehensive Children's Receiving Center Designation Criteria Policy. This one will be out for public comment until November 23rd. This, although there was no mandate by the state to address this particular issue, when they did create regulations to more rigorously enforce the EMSC rules, we felt we needed to review our CCRPC policy and make sure that it essentially was consistent with what the state was requiring. And there were a few things that we felt we were possibly falling behind, and on the quality of what we were offering was not as robust as what the state was suggesting, and so we made some changes, and that is now out for public comment.
Great. I would highly recommend for those two remaining policies are open that you look at those. When we were at the CPAC meeting, there were a few things that the state added that make it onerous for some of the centers to maintain compliance. They add a lot more specifics on the physician side about what kind of qualifications they expect them to have. And I think most of the places will fall into line with that, but there is the potential that somebody may be trained in neurology, but they didn't maintain their board certification, and it specifically says you need to be board certified in neurology to do X, Y, and Z. So look at those, send your comments, and it's important so that we try and keep the system functioning. It's a very high-level functioning system with cardiovascular and stroke in Orange County, and we want to maintain that coverage.
Dr. Schultz, so in Orange County right now, going back to your previous comment about CHOC, so is CHOC a CCRC then, or what other facilities in Orange County are designated, or is that what we're building up to?
It's a good question. There actually are two centers in Orange County that are formally designated as CCERCs. One is CHOC, and the other is Mission. And they are both bases, and they both get calls from the paramedics dealing with kids and sometimes asking for treatment guidance, other times just asking for destination decisions. But they're an excellent resource to really sort of elevate the level of care that the paramedics can provide in the field.
All right, next new business. The Orange County EMS updates the standing orders, ALS and BLS procedures, and base hospital treatment guidelines.
So the what's in the correspondence were the policies, procedures, and base hospital treatment guidelines that were updated and posted on the web as upcoming, and then they are now formal. But because it's hard to train, you can't train medics instantly on something that changes. You need to provide a certain amount of flexibility from the time that you really want the policy to be in place to the time that you're actually going to enforce it. And so we usually give 6 months for that. So the policies and procedures and standing orders that we changed were posted. Those go into effect October 1st, but they can still use the older policies and procedures through April 1st. On April 1st, then our expectation is that everybody will be on the newer ones, but we need that flexibility. So those are, again, in the correspondence. You can look at those if you have any questions about what we did to those particular policies and what might have been going on that caused us to make those changes. The other thing is that Kim Zaki from CHOC did review all of the pediatric-based hospital treatment guidelines and submitted them to me. We reviewed those, and those are now done. But they didn't make the October 1st deadline. However, because it's paramedics don't train to those, these are for just the MICNs, the mobile intensive care nurses that run the radio. They can get up to speed pretty quickly on those, so we went ahead and posted those anyway. But they don't impact the paramedics, so that lag phase where the training is necessary didn't really come into play, and the nurses can pick this stuff up pretty quickly, so we just went ahead and posted it.
All right, that covers new business. Next, member comments. Any of the members of the committee have any comments they would like to make? No? Okay. Next is
I'll make one on just on behalf of the fire chiefs. And I know he had some comments about the public safety shutoff affecting of EMS. We don't have anything going on currently in Orange County as far as that public safety shutoff. There's been some discussions of that, but there would be a 48-hour notification for us. But I think, as you mentioned, Dr. Ritter, the onus is to get out, that everybody does prepare themselves. And I think over the course of the news discussions, a lot of things pop up that you don't think about, and how the shutoffs do affect not only businesses but our affected populations, the affect gas supply. So from the fire chief's level, we are very aware of these implications and have a very strong communication with Cal OES and how we can get that out to our home agencies and our surrounding areas within Orange County, because we do realize that it is a very huge impact on all of us. This is probably our first Santa Ana wind event that we're going through for this year, and it is on the heels of what we've gone through over the last year with the Paradise Fire, et cetera, and the Woolsey Fire. So I'm sure there's going to be some review and debrief after this event is concluded. But anything that people can think about and submit to your local fire chiefs as suggestions would be, we'd definitely like to hear that, so that we can do our best to keep everybody safe and to make the best decision possible considering all the circumstances that are involved.
I think it's great, and I think it's a real opportunity right now for public education. When I worked on Wednesday night in the ER, that was a big discussion that we had amongst the staff, because I asked them, how prepared are you? What would you do if your power was off? Do you have a generator? Talked about keeping your gas tank full, that sort of thing. That was based on talking to my brother that day. But at the same time, as a group, they were very interested because it, could potentially touch them. And normally people don't think about disaster preparedness until after the earthquake happens or what have you. So I do think this is a good opportunity for people to up their disaster game, and education is part of it. So thank you for bringing that update on behalf of the fire chiefs, because I think the fire departments are that frontline interface, as well as all EMS people with the public, about what we need to do when the electricity goes off, which is going to be very similar to what happens in
through the chair.
Big disaster.
Just one comment, just to echo on the fire chief's comments for the ambulance side. We did have a polling 2 days ago for the ambulance in preparation, and once again this year, the Orange County ambulance provider stepped up and have preassembled plans for 60 ambulances if needed throughout this event. So we're also on standby and prepared.
That's great. Thank you for that update.
Yeah, thank you.
Next is the public forum. Is anybody in the audience like to address the committee here? Okay. Our next meeting is Friday, January 10th. Attachment 9 has the dates for the meetings for next year, which I will read aloud because you may not have this. January 10th, April 10th, July 10th. Got a 10th thing going. And then October 9th. So January 10th, April 10th, July 10th, and October 9th will be our quarterly meetings for next year in 2020. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you for coming, everybody.